Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Are you working? What kind of work do you do?
This is the Punt and Pass Podcast.
Touchdown! 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 Georgia!
Now here are your hosts, two-time All-American punter Drew Butler.
Drew Butler, leader in the country in punts 49+. See if he booms this one. He does. Wow.
And Rose Bowl, Sugar Bowl, and SEC championship winning quarterback Jake Fromm.
Flea flicker to get the night started. Downfield looking for Godwin into his hands. And guess which dogs are barking first?
Now with the latest from around the SEC and the world of college football, it's the Punt and Pass Podcast.
Dogs are winners. A national championship for a new generation of Bulldogs.
Victory is mine. Yeah, surprisingly, I've been lame, waiting for your next mistake. I put in work and watch my status escalate.
Your cornballs get stolen.
Welcome in to the Punt and Pass Podcast. I'm your host, Drew Butler, usually joined alongside my co-host, Jake Fromm. Jake has one more preseason game left for the Washington Commanders, so yes, he's busy. He will be back, joined by a very, very special co-host tonight, though, leading up to week zero of the 2023 college football season. None other than my man, Chris Marler. I will properly introduce Chris in just one second. But first, make sure you follow us on social media. We are at Punt and Pass on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Drew Butler. Jake is at From Jake. Chris is at Vern Funquist. Check out puntandpass.com, the number one destination for all things college football. And this week zero preview show of Punt and Pass is presented to you by none other than Prize Picks. That's right. You know them by now at Prize Picks on Twitter and Instagram, prizepicks.com. Download the Prize Picks app, the new look app, and use the promo code PUNT, P-U-N-T, PUNT. You get a 100% deposit match up to your first $100, the best daily fantasy game on the market right now, and the first college football board of the season. Chris, it's live. I'm looking at it right now. Sam Hartman, Notre Dame, they're playing Navy in Ireland on Saturday. His total passing yards over under 260.5. Caleb Williams taking on San Jose State, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. His total passing yards, 270.5 passing yards. You're going to go over, you're going to go under. I got a couple of others that I'm going to shout out later on in the podcast, but download the new look Prize Picks app right now. It's sick. Proud of the guys over there. Shout out Prize Picks. Download the app. Use the promo code PUNT. You get a 100% deposit match up to your first $100. Make this college football season your most profitable with Prize Picks. Promo code PUNT. All right, Chris. Saturday Down South, the Saturday Football Uncensored podcast from Saturday Down South at Vern Funquist on social media. And let me just say this, okay? You're like my favorite college football media member. I'll just say it. You're funny. You're smart. You don't take yourself too seriously. You like to mix it up. I like the shit you put out there. So you're my favorite. I mean, I'm talking Cole Kubelik, Josh Pate, Paul Feinbaum.
Look at how much I'm blushing right now.
All these guys, you're number one for me. So thanks so much for joining the podcast, man. How are you?
I can't tell if you're being serious, but I appreciate it.
I'm being dead serious. You know that. Come on that. Now.
I always get nervous when I do a Georgia show because, like, I say it all the time. I respect the shit out of this program so much, and Kirby and the coaches. And obviously, I have a lot of love for you and a lot of the other guys. Not as much for Aaron Murray right now, like physically in this moment. Just because of some quarterback rankings, but no, I mean, like, I really do respect Georgia so much as a program, but I also know I'm very self-aware of what I do on Twitter on a semi-daily basis.
It's brilliant. Now. It's brilliant.
It's just my unstate, like my mental instability. So I appreciate you saying that. I'll tell the therapist that things are going well.
Here's what I love about Georgia. And this is an SEC podcast, obviously Georgia centric. We cover the biggest games of the week each and every week. I have come to just appreciate, and there are a couple of Twitter accounts that I follow that are diehard Georgia fans who are just relentless. I mean, they're true bulldogs. If one person says they don't like red and black, dude, they sick, they grab on, and they don't let go. And I'm like, how do people have this much time? One, but two, they take it so seriously. I love it. That's the greatest thing about Georgia. So I'm sure you know some of these accounts because they love to mix it up with you. But I love that small subsector of social media. It's brilliant.
I think that, like, it's so much fun because it's all because we love the same thing, right? Like, and listen, I don't mean this in a bad way, but I grew up in the state of Georgia. I always say this, like, you want to, like, want to know how white trash I am? My first stepdad was a season ticket holder to Georgia. So, like, we would go to these games and stuff like that all the time. I'm very familiar with UGA and the fans. And I said, starting in like 2018, when you could start seeing the wheels turning, that this was going to happen. And it was like, man, y'all better. It's like doomsday prepping. Like, you should know that this is coming, like, literally coming down the track. And, like, it's going to be miserable for everybody. But hey, man, they're the best program in the country. They're doing it better at every single level, from recruiting to on the field, to development, to the NFL, than any other program. It's not really close. And you know, I'm excited for the season. So,
you know, it should be exciting. And there's a lot to be desired from a scheduling perspective. Look, out of their control, they were supposed to open with Oklahoma. Kirby has made it a point, as has the athletic department, to make their out-of-conference scheduling really tough. It's not shaping up that way coming up this season, and probably for them, a fortunate situation by really being able to ease into the first month of the season. I'll ask you if you're even worried about the South Carolina game in week three, of which they'll be 18.5-point favorites, maybe even more than that. But Carson Beck, the new starter, we're about to talk about Branson Robinson, who had a non-contact patella tendon rupture yesterday. Yeah. Out for the season. Bummer for him. He was coming back from an injury that he got dinged up in the spring. So will the running back room be maybe vulnerable throughout the season? I want to get your thoughts on that. But you just mentioned recruiting and depth. And look, it's no surprise. Kirby took the playbook from Nick Saban in Alabama.
Right.
He's implemented it at Georgia. He's a little bit younger. They got a little bit more juice.
A little bit younger.
And here you go. Like, this is the situation that you forecasted 7 years ago.
Well, I think it's awesome too. Going back real quick to the schedule, because I feel like it's important to touch on this. Like,
it's bad. It's bad.
Listen, Kentucky has the same schedule.
Of course.
And we're not talking about that. They're going to get to probably 9 or 10 wins because of it. And we're not, that'll be a Cinderella story. The reason why, and listen, I grew up an Alabama fan. I think everyone knows that. I do my best to be as objective as possible. I will tell you right now, as a person that has watched the Saban dynasty and all that kind of stuff, the reason why people are getting on Georgia's schedule is not because this is, and I used to say this all the time at Bama, and people get so mad. You don't want to see Bama play tougher games. You want to see Alabama lose. Alabama had a top seven strength of schedule in 6 of the last 9 years, including number one in the country twice.
Yeah.
It's not their fault that they were beating whoever. Georgia played 7 ranked teams a year ago and put up an average of 46.3 points per game in those 7 games.
Great point.
They're not scared of anyone. They're not scared of anyone. And like, what really is happening is people look at that schedule and they're like, that's a win, that's a win, that's a win. And they're going to skate through that. And like, that's not their fault. They tried to schedule Oklahoma.
Yeah.
We really think that a 6-7 Oklahoma team from a year ago was going to challenge Georgia? Because I don't. Like,
it would have been fun to go to Norman, but other than that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess because it's not tornado season. But I mean, you know, Tiger King, I think, is still locked up. So there's not much to do there. But I think that, like, when you look at this, when you look at the program itself, Georgia has built this unstoppable force, because it's so early and they've had some close games, but people don't want to see Georgia play tougher competition. They want to see Georgia lose. And the bad news is for those teams, that's not happening anytime soon. It's just not.
I totally agree. And Kirby Smart said it as much when he was asked about it. I think during SEC Media Day, someone's like, what are your thoughts about the schedule? He goes, you come play it. Like,
right.
You come play it. We'll see how you guys do. Like,
yeah,
they're so much more focused on what they can control, and this is just simply something that they cannot. So,
well, hold on, real quick. You said media days. He said that.
I think so. It was like right after media days. It wasn't during his, you know, monologue or whatever you want to call it. It was in an interview afterwards. But that's, you know, the questions were being asked, and he was like, "Well, then you guys come play." Like, I don't know what you want me to say. So,
I think it's interesting that he heard that question but didn't hear.
I mean, I'm sitting right here in my seat. I was watching my TV on SEC Network. You picked up the mic. I was like, here's Chris's chance. Here you go. And I don't know if Kirby did a masterclass of completely. You think so? You think he heard that you? He was like, I don't hear the question. You got, that was a bad look.
It was awful. It was a bad look. And you know what sucked too?
Explain it for our listeners, please.
Okay. The whole thing was, so I had gone the year before and I asked the question about Brian Kelly and the accent before he had gotten beaten into the ground and it goes viral. Then I asked the question to Pittman about his schedule, but I prepped him by saying like, hey, by the way, you're 16-6 against the spread. Just wanted to personally say thank you. And he's like, yeah.
This is during the coaches monologues, right. State of the Union at their opening of SEC Media Days.
Because my main thing is this, when you go to Media Days, it's the last chance you get to see them in a less buttoned up environment. And I didn't go to school to be a journalist. And I don't give a shit if that sounds bad to other people. If you want a Big J journalist, and I don't think Georgia fans really want that because they fight with the AJC. Like I fight with my exes. Like it's crazy. So like,
yes, that's true.
Yeah. So like my whole thing is I'm here to have fun. I'm here. Like I love this sport. Just like the fans.
It's entertainment.
That's all it is. And you don't get that kind of access to them. And so my whole thing was going to be my serious question to Kirby is, dude, you have the number one recruiting class in the country, back-to-back Natties. You have had more kids you've put in the league in the first 7 years than any other coach in modern college football history. Is there anything that you feel like you can improve upon with all of those accolades I just mentioned? And that was long-winded enough. And then I decided to add on to it and be like, by the way, this guy next to me just said, y'all are going 7-5. You're welcome. Ha ha. And like, he just fucking swatted the second row. And what made it worse was, I don't know if you followed along with what was going on with me trying to get there, but it was a nightmare travel.
Oh, dude, I followed along. I mean, you could have walked to Nashville and got there quicker than what you had to go through.
But anyway, yeah, it was, but no, I Kirby's right though, man. Like if you want to play the schedule, come play it. Cause I don't like, there's maybe three or four teams in the country that can go through that schedule and go through it unscathed. Like, I mean, imagine them playing a Big Ten schedule.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah.
He was actually asked about that today. Kirby Smart was about the 7-5 thing from a year ago. And a reporter said, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but the reporter said like, I don't want to call you a liar, but were you making up these fabrications? And Kirby is like, he looked at me. He's like, dude, I don't say that to my team. He's like, that doesn't work in our locker room. Like I don't go into our locker room and tell my players, people think you're going 7-5. One, because it's not true. Two, they don't care. He was like, they already listened to enough stuff on Twitter and social media. I don't have to motivate them with that. He said, quote, you know, maybe a game or two a year where I feel like we're getting a little bit of disrespect. Yeah. I'll lean into that, but it's not 7-5 or whatever the hell some of these people were saying.
We had my good buddy and former co-host, Connor O'Gara from SCS. He had Nolan Smith on his podcast like a couple months ago, and he admitted on the podcast, there's a clip of it on SCS Instagram where he was like, yeah, I made up the 7-5 thing.
Of course.
And I bought the locker room. And like, here's the thing too. It was dumb as shit when the kid said it on the field after the Natty. Oh,
so funny, dude.
You're walking off of a 65-7 beatdown in this Natty. And he's like, y'all thought we were going 7-5. We're like, oh, collectively, we'd all like a word with you, sir.
Yeah.
But I mean, but motivate yourself in whatever way possible. It's in the locker room. You've been in the locker room. I've been in the locker room. It's tough to stay motivated as an 18, 22-year-old kid for that long. So hats off to him.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to some topical news. And we'll stick on Georgia for a second because this is probably the biggest news around the SEC today as the official kickoff for most SEC teams next Saturday. However, Vanderbilt is in action this weekend with half their stadium under construction. The Hawaii Fighting Rainbow Warriors are coming to Nashville, so that will be a scene. But Georgia coach Kirby Smart comes out today and says running back Branson Robinson out for the year, non-contact injury on Tuesday. He ruptured his patella tendon. Tough for the running back room in general. Georgia, a little bit of an injury bug going around the roster right now. Some other starters are dinged up at the moment, but Kirby said it. This puts the running back position in a tough situation for Georgia heading into the season. Kendall Milton still dealing with a hamstring, guy who's dealt with a lot of injuries throughout his career at Georgia. Andrew Paul coming off an injury from last year. Dejan Edwards seems like he's going to be the guy at the moment. What are your thoughts? More pressure on Carson Beck? Are you worried? Is this overblown? Is this going to be plug and play? Get another 4 or 5 star in there.
So yes to all the above, you know, besides the part about it being concerning. We've talked enough about the schedule, so I don't want to hone in on that, but it's like the schedule sets up nice. You guys should be fine. The South Carolina game is really the only test you have early. You could maybe say Auburn. And for whatever reason, I don't want to get into it, but outside of Florida, Kirby Smart doesn't hate anybody like he hates South Carolina and Shane Beamer. So
that does seem like something that's real. And I agree with you.
Very real. Yeah. It's funny to watch. But no, it sucks with Branson Robinson because I think that anybody that followed his recruitment, followed him in the national championship game a year ago, has seen him in a sleeveless shirt. Any of those three things, you want to see this kid on the field because he's a freak of nature. I mean, he was putting up like so many big runs in the national championship game, like untouched 20 touchdown runs and stuff like that. You already have the best offensive line in the country. I think you could say it puts more pressure on Beck, but you have a stable of backs no matter what. Like Milton, you don't need all of them healthy at the beginning of the year. Dejon Edwards is a guy that I love to watch. That kid runs so hard. He's so much
totally
fun.
Agree.
Maybe this is something that helps you get it going in the passing game a little bit more and like working in the play action and be able to develop the receiving standpoint because you have some new guys there. But here's the thing too, that I think that Georgia fans should take comfort in from this is like 2021. We talk about the injuries that like, I know like that I and Bama fans brought up late in the year. Like one of the things that isn't talked about enough is that Georgia was missing a lot of their starters throughout the year. But the benefit of it was George Pickens tore his ACL in preseason camp, like in spring camp. So you knew going into the year,
that's right.
Hey, this is the obstacles we have to clear. It's much easier to have this be the incident, like in the beginning of the year, so you can start developing people. And then by the time you get to like the November when you get challenged by Ole Miss and Tennessee, now you're already like a more developed and formed football team. You're going to be fine.
You're not as it's not as vulnerable as when it happens midseason. You know, for lack of a better term, you're not going to get caught with your pants down where you've been feeding a guy. Exactly. I mean, where you're trusting a guy week in and week out in the game plan, then you lose him. Maybe the guy behind him is not really well versed with the game plan, you know, all that stuff. So you make up a good point. Kirby Smart says, quote, "It's not going to affect our run to pass ratio. We do have capable backs, but he was one of our better backs. When he was healthy last year, he was coming into his own. He was learning how to pass protect. He had a really good spring. We were really excited about where he was heading." You don't really hear Kirby, you know, as emotional, if you wanted to call it that, but complimentary. Right. And I know this is devastating for a guy like Branson Robinson, but you have to remember Andrew Paul tore his ACL last August. So he's still trying to get to 100%. And then you go down the injury report. Smile Munden's dealing with a foot. Ernest Green, left tackle, an ankle. Lawson Lucky, ankle. Kendall Milton, hamstring. Kamari Lassiter, foot. So, look, rest up. They're supposedly getting into the UT Martin game plan Thursday or Friday of this week. And we'll see what the team looks like. 6 p.m. night game next Saturday night in San Francisco.
A night game.
Against UT Martin. How about that? There you go.
Yeah, well, I mean, just say it's Tennessee. And just for historical benefits later, just say, yeah, we played Tennessee at home at night, start the year. But I will say this last thing real quick about why you should be comfortable on it. Is like there's not a coach in the country specifically on defense that rotates more guys to get meaningful reps throughout the entire year than Kirby Smart. And I think that this is only going to add to that. And the defense will take out. You're not going to miss a beat with what they're going to do.
You're totally right. Chris Marler joins us on Punt and Pass from Saturday Down South, Saturday Football Uncensored podcast. Go follow him at Vern Funquist on social media. Probably the biggest news. The biggest storyline in college football right now is the Swamp Kings documentary on Netflix, covering 2005 to 2010 Florida football, Urban Meyer. I think the most misleading thing here is the series in which this documentary has been put into, which is the Untold series on Netflix. And that moniker would tell you that we're going to learn something that we don't know. However, this documentary was a complete flop. Now, keep in mind, Chris, the teams that they were showing, those are the guys that I played against. And we got our asses beat by these teams. They were very, very good at football. But you missed so many of the storylines completely just left out that we, the audience, wanted to see. Aaron Hernandez, Percy Harvin, Cam Newton, the Pouncey twins and their relationship with Aaron Hernandez, Urban Meyer's on the home front all the shit going on there, dude, nothing. Like, we know Florida lost games Urban Meyer's first year.
Yeah.
We know Florida had a lot of talent. We know they got great recruits. I don't want to see that again. What the hell was this?
Yeah, I have so many thoughts on this.
Media propaganda.
I should have looked this up, and I don't know if this is true, but I've seen multiple people comment on it, so I'm going to lean towards assuming that that's what that is true. But apparently the producer or director or whoever put this together was like, this is going to sound bad, but like
Urban Meyer's brother. I mean, like, right, who was it?
Right. It was like, but it was somebody that's not from, I'll say, the Southeast or the country, yeah, that is like putting together a documentary. And it's a lot of like, it's a really good topic to do it on, but not really well-versed in anything that was like very important to it, for one. And then two, again, I'll give another shout out. Connor O'Gara, he said this was a championship DVD. Like,
that's like, great. Yeah,
that's all it was. It's like, yes. like okay. So, and here's what pisses me off. Like,
1999, free shipping and handling, and you get a commemorative football for ordering it.
Yeah,
I'm that's what this was.
Getting like a VHS like suitcase when Bama won in 92. But no, so like, so this all, like, what pisses me off is when they first put it together and they were promoting it, and I was like, oh, what? Like, Swamp Kings. I watched the Johnny Manziel thing, and it was, especially as somebody that's like pretty big into like mental health stuff, I was like, I could have watched that for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
It was an hour long. It seemed like it was very quick. And most of them are an hour long. So then we find out this is a 4-part, 45 minutes a piece. Like,
you think it's going to be remarkable content.
And they put like the poster together, and it's like Tebow, and then like there's Aaron Hernandez and Riley Cooper. And I knew when Riley Cooper was on there, I was a little bit like suspicious, because I was like, he didn't ever get into trouble in college. So like, what is the issue? But like Hernandez, obviously Cam Newton, like you brought up, there were so many storylines they missed. And you watch the first episode and it was like, okay, this is good. This is like behind the scenes. This is where some of this anger comes from. Pretty good expose on that 20 or 2005 game in Tuscaloosa where they got their ass beat.
Yeah, love that it. Was.
But then like you go into the next one, and you're like, okay, by the time we got to the 2007 season, I was so angry because I was like, I don't know who needs to hear this, but none of us care about a 9-14.
Yeah, we don't care
at all. At all. Even in the 2009 season, there was like the story that they could have made with like Brandon Spikes and whatever. And Tebow, they were like, we were on the road against a Mississippi State team and we almost lost. And we're like, I don't give a shit. You didn't lose. Yeah. You won by double digits. No one remembers that game. And I tell you what, the worst part about it is this. I remember in the first 4 years he was there, they had 26 arrests. Everyone knows the stat by now. In 2008, they had 43 guys arrested out of like 120. But his first 4 years, they had 26 arrests. And it wasn't like, not in a rude way, but it wasn't like speeding tickets or like, you know, missing a court date. I remember reading like the whole list of them. There was one that was like a starting safety or defensive back who was in trouble for credit card fraud because he was using his roommate/teammate's dead girlfriend's gas card for months after she died. And then her mom got a bill in the mail and was like, who is charging like, you know, $2 worth of money?
Yeah, that's crazy.
But none of it was touched at all. It was like, I hate to say it, Tebow's a great guy. The moment he was like put into it, I was like, this is going to suck because they're just gonna, like, imagine having all those characters and then being like, you know what we should do? What if we made Urban Meyer likable?
Yeah. Like you're 100% right. And I kind of liken it, but it's totally different. Hard Knocks. Okay. Like Aaron Rodgers now is like the babe, the boy. Oh, what a nice guy. He's like taking care of his teammates. He's very likable. He's laughing. He's affable. Like, they're not going to paint Aaron Rodgers in a bad light. The Jets are allowing NFL films. And that's just not how it happens. However, with this one, with the amount Urban Meyer's on there, you're like, wait a minute. This is intentional brainwash. Dude, like, what are we doing?
At one point, he even said in the video, he made some comment about how I was like, you know, I wasn't going to kick a player off the team because I had learned the lesson. And I knew where he was going with it beforehand because it was like a player he kicked off the team for blah, blah, blah. But when they were talking about it, listen, I'm not making a joke here and trying to be funny, but the whole thing was he kicked a player off the team for domestic violence and that player died or killed himself or something a year later because he didn't have football in his life. And that is tremendously sad. But watching Urban Meyer sit here and have some like fake morality that he was clinging on to of saying, oh, domestic violence, we have a zero tolerance policy. Well, I tell you what, not with your coaching staff, you don't. Not at all. Because Zach Smith's wife sat there through three different locations.
They didn't even touch that. I know.
It made me so mad. And then you know what, though? Also, last thing, Florida fans, now I kind of get it. If you're a Georgia fan, I kind of get it. Because the amount of, like, shit that they were talking about, like, oh, okay, haters are going to hate. nobody's scared of Florida. Nobody's scared of Florida right now, besides maybe cops and meth heads at Wawa. That's about it. And so, like, if you're telling me that, like, oh, man, like everyone liked it. No, you're the, it was only made for you guys. And that's fine. Maybe that's what it's supposed to be. But football fans hated it.
I saw Ahmad Black. He was like, I hate Georgia. Now, let me just say a couple things. One, I know Ahmad Black. He's like one of the nicest guys ever. I know Major Wright. I see them Georgia Florida weekend every year. Major is an unbelievably awesome guy, does tons of great charity work down in Florida still. I have so much fun with those guys. I was a rookie in Pittsburgh with Chris Rainey. Chris Rainey's one of the funniest dudes ever. I know he had a little issue that wasn't covered as well. Chris is an very nice guy. I was teammates with Marquise Pouncey in Pittsburgh. Marquise Pouncey, one of the nicest guys. Marcus Gilbert, all these Florida guys, got to play with them, got to know them. Of course, you know, get on each other about Georgia, Florida, but that brotherhood, that bond, yes, you hate each other. Yes, you make bets in the locker room when the game comes up the last weekend of October. But there was a lot left to be desired within the documentary.
Yeah.
By not covering that, you're not saying, oh, these guys are terrible people and we should have covered the stories. They're good guys. They're nice guys. Right. We were all idiots in college. We all did dumb shit in college.
Yeah.
And when you're on one of the best college football teams in the country with an unprecedented run, like, you want to see how those things were handled inside the facility. And they were able to maintain greatness. Like, I just thought that, I thought they missed the boat on that. Yeah, I know.
That's the whole story of, like you're, listen, and people don't realize this. If you didn't play, like, I played baseball in college. I didn't play anywhere close to your level of, like, it was D2 baseball. Not everyone in the locker room likes each other. You talk about the brotherhood and familyhood, but it's a big place with a lot of people. Not everyone likes each other. And, like, you know, I didn't like people because, like, we dated the same girl or something. This is, like, how do you have a virgin televangelist and a murderer and, like,
exactly. And that dynamic is unheard of.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, dude. It sucks that they missed the boat that bad.
Yeah.
And, like, Cam Newton was at Florida, gets kicked out of Florida, goes to JUCO, then goes to Auburn and has one of the greatest college football seasons of all time. They did not even, interview him? No.
No. And also, dude, like,
I mean, how do you miss that?
And they showed a highlight of him. And think about this, because they talked about, like, up to 2009 and then 2010s when everything ended. Cam was at Auburn in 2010. This is how the whole thing started. Like, there's so many pieces they missed.
Yeah, dude.
It's just crazy.
So we'll go on to the next topic, because I want to get your thoughts on Tennessee. You've been in the throes on social media for your thoughts on Tennessee, so we'll get to that in just a second. But my recruiting class, 2007, in the state of Georgia, Cam Newton, Eric Berry, Alan Bailey was a big one. Josh Nesbitt went to Georgia Tech. And then my high school teammate, Cam Hayward, who's still an all-pro with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, think about that. Caleb King was the big five-star who ended up going to Georgia.
Parkview High School.
Rennie Curran is still a very close friend of mine. He was a big-time recruit as well. But Eric Berry commits to Tennessee. Alan Bailey commits to Miami. Cam Newton commits to Florida. And Cameron Hayward, who we all thought was going to Georgia, ends up committing to Ohio State. So Georgia's left holding the bag, you know, literally and figuratively.
Okay.
They're like, we are not getting any of the top recruits in the state. And they were planning on it, because this is back when you had your signing day first Wednesday of February.
Right.
So I was begging for a scholarship. I had an offer from Duke and Wake Forest, and all I wanted to do was go to Georgia. They were like, come walk on. I was like, why would I forego a full ride? I'm not going to do that.
Right.
Well, my close friend, high school teammate, Cam Hayward, man, he commits to Ohio State. I get a call like 3 days later. They're like, hey, Drew, we're going to offer you a full scholarship to Georgia. I'm like, yes. So thanks, I always tell Cameron Hayward, I'm like, thank you so much, Cam.
Yeah.
If you didn't go to Ohio State, I probably would not go to Georgia. It's a little butterfly effect, little minnow theory.
Funny. It's funny how all that works out, too.
It's so funny. So that's just my story on that recruiting. But Cam Newton, like, all those guys my age, they were all there at the same time. Those sport teams, dude, they were freaking kick ass.
Well, and, like, pretty didn't crazy. Rick say that he was, like, he wanted Newton to be a tight end?
I think that is what I had always heard, that they literally just recruited him as a tight end. And he was like, no, I'm going to go be a quarterback.
Right. Right.
So that's why he did not go to Georgia. All right. Let's touch on your Tennessee thoughts, because I'm in agreement with you. Everybody is so fast to say Tennessee is going to be a world beater this year. Yeah. They had tons of success last year. My whole thing is this: they lost a lot. Hendon Hooker should have been a Heisman finalist. I think they just didn't invite him for whatever reason. Cedric Tillman no longer there. Jalin Hyatt no longer there. And you put out a video that I didn't even really recognize, but I was like, that makes a lot of sense. I said it in Monday's podcast. Tennessee's beaten Florida twice in 51 years in Gainesville. That is not an automatic W. So
let me just bring out some notes.
Please.
This is who I am as a person. I always say this, and I know I joke around a lot and I talk a lot of shit, but like, I always say, if we're going to talk about sports, we're going to talk about football, we're going to talk about anything, we're going to do it in reality. And like, I think that next year Tennessee could be really good. They just got a 5-star D end out of Alabama. They've got Nico there. Like, they're putting together incredible classes. See, people nowadays are too young to remember. And you obviously remember this with the Eric Berry stuff and playing against this time period. But Tennessee was a national recruiting brand for a very long time. Oh, they had a footprint in California.
A huge college football power. Huge. Absolutely.
And they would bring in people from all over the country constantly, because it's not like Tennessee is a huge hotbed, even in the Southeast, let alone the country, for recruits. But when you talk about consistency, and this is why I'm not saying they're going to be bad at all. Like,
nobody is
last year. But that's the problem, Drew. That's the problem. That no one is saying anything except for Tennessee's back. And I think for their fans, you want to believe that. And maybe they are. Maybe they are. But when you look at what they lost, think about some of the things that we say about, I don't know, I'll throw out Alabama. When you lose offensive playmakers at the skill positions, or you lose a quarterback that should have been a Heisman finalist, or you lose, I don't know, a starting left tackle in the first round.
Or both coordinators.
Right. You lost two receivers to the NFL, including the Biletnikoff winner. You lost a first round left tackle. Mm-hmm. And then the guy who, and people don't want to hear this, but statistically speaking, is the greatest quarterback Tennessee has ever had, even better than Peyton Manning. And now with this offense, it's like, you're going to put up numbers. It's without a doubt, you're going to put up numbers. Joe Milton's going to put up a lot of yards. And that's what a hypo offense does. But a lot of this is predicated on downfield passing and downfield accuracy with the passing. And we don't know if he's done that. We've seen one game where he's been great. He was good as a backup last year. He's lost two starting jobs, including one at Tennessee.
I've said this, and yes. Why is that being just forgotten? Because he had one good game in the Orange Bowl? Because he can throw a ball 80 yards?
It's like a steroid era, like, confusion of like, hey, Mark McGwire's a great baseball player. Like, Mark McGwire's a great home run hitter. That's about it. And so, like, you look at the numbers, and this is what I want to look at when I'm like, okay, well, let's look at it from a consistency standpoint, because your three biggest games are Bama, Tennessee, or Bama, Florida, and Georgia. The one that looks like the easiest to win is Florida. We'll circle back to that. Mm-hmm. Alabama, you have to go to Tuscaloosa.
Huge revenge factor.
Yeah. And their fans know that's coming.
When is the last time Alabama has lost to teams in back-to-back seasons? The same team in back-to-back seasons?
2010, 2011, LSU.
Okay. There you go.
And LSU played for a national championship.
Yeah, a great team ever.
Right. So, and that's what I'm saying here too. And I said it last year in that video that went viral with Georgia fans, which was like, this whole thing about Tennessee being 2019 LSU. You're not. You're a great team with a great story and a great program. You're not 2019 LSU. And this year, maybe you're going to be good. The East isn't like, I don't think it's full of world beaters necessarily. You get A&M out of the West. Like, the schedule is okay. But I tell you what, like,
that game is in Knoxville, A&M.
Yeah, the week before they play Bama. The whole assumption that you're going to beat Bama, you're 2-16 the last 18 games against Alabama. The two wins are by a total of 6 points. You're 1-16 in your last, or 1-15 in your last 16 with a win on the last play of the game by 3 points a year ago, right? Only two of the 15 losses were by single digits. 15 losses were by an average of 26 points per game, and Bama put up 40 or more in 10 of the last 16.
That's, I mean, it's Bama. Not even competitive in the last 20 years.
Now look at Georgia. They're 2-11 since 2010.
Dobbs Hail Mary.
Two wins by 10 total points, one by three, one by seven. One was the Dobnail boot game. Your losses are by a combined 22.8 points per game over that time period. You've scored over 20 points once in your last six losses against Kirby, because Kirby's won six in a row since that. You scored over 20 once. You can make the argument that last year was the biggest, like, that wasn't even the biggest difference, like, point differential. But it was the most dominating game because of what Georgia did.
Yes.
They've lost 600 to Kirby by an average of 26 points per game. Now let's get to Florida, where everyone's just assuming this is a dub. Against these three teams combined since 2010, you are combined 5 and 34 against these three teams. You're 5 and 34 against these three teams. I already told you the point differential in all these. Florida, you're 2 and 16 in their last 18 games against them. Since 2010, 2 and 11. Won by 10 and by 5 points total. Your losses are by 3, scored by 17 points. And then the number that just blew my mind. If you're talking about this Tennessee team is going to go down to the swamp, no matter how bad we think Florida is, and just go down there and beat them, Tennessee has won 2 games in the swamp in the last 51 years.
Okay, and this game is at 7 p.m. It's a night game in the swamp, September 16th. Your 3:30 SEC CBS game is South Carolina at Georgia. It'll roll you right into Tennessee at Florida in the swamp, 7 p.m. And Florida plays Utah next week. If they win that game in Salt Lake, I think it's going to be a tough one. Cam Rising's back. Utah's tough out there. Like, if Florida wins that game, it's going to be 3-0 or 2-0 versus 2-0.
Dude, if they lose it, it's a must win.
Of course. Of course.
Like, and here's the thing, too, that people aren't talking about with Tennessee's schedule. You look at September. I've said this, and I got a lot of heat for it. I don't think that they're going to lose this game. But the way the schedule sets up, we all assume they're going to be either undefeated or at least, like, by the time they get to Bama, or 5-0 in September. Those last three games of September, at Florida, home against, UTEP?
UTSA.
UTSA, my bad.
Shout out MacGruber.
Beat Nation. So you have a game you're at Florida, you have UTSA at home, and then you have South Carolina at home. South Carolina ran out of fireworks last year, literally, when they were playing you because they scored so many times.
I know.
So that's your revenge game.
Yeah.
In sandwich in between there, you have an 11-win team from a year ago with UTSA that's returning a seventh-year starter at quarterback.
So are you saying that game could be close too?
I think it's going to be like within 2 scores.
Now you're losing me. But I agree. I agree. Look, it's just the here's what you're saying on the whole. Everybody is just assuming that Tennessee is going to be this world beater this year. And I don't see it. They've lost a lot. They've lost a lot, most notably their quarterback. So, look, I'm in the same boat as you. Their Vegas win total is 9 wins. Like, it's right there. It's not 10.5. It's not 11.
It's 9.5, and that's with a schedule built in Georgia and Bama. So you're telling me you're just going to go unscathed? The rest, get out. I bet it's like the hammer, just Thor's hammer.
Yeah.
Dwayne the Lock Johnson, that like the entire season right now.
Okay. What about Chris Doering saying he thinks Alabama's going to go 9-3 this year? I think the demise of Alabama has been greatly exaggerated. I'm not buying LSU like everybody is, and I'm not buying people doubting Alabama. Like, and again, I think the general sentiment of the college football public is Alabama's going to be great, but all the, you know, Big J journalists, the talking heads are just, I think they're all over LSU. And that surprises me.
I was on the radio the other day in Atlanta, and Garrett Chapman, I love him to death. He's on 92.9 The Game. Yeah. And he made a comment. He was like, I don't think we're talking enough about LSU. And I was like, no, we've been talking about LSU all offseason. They're top
Everybody
five.
Everybody is.
Everyone. And like the only thing I knew what he meant.
They might lose to Florida State in week one.
Remember, I'm saying here's what cracks me about the revisionist history and just being a prisoner of the moment is, you look at the last season, right? And this is what I like. I've said this all often about LSU. They played Florida State and they lost to Florida State. If you watch that game, they got dominated by Florida State for 3.5 quarters. Florida State was up by 7, goes into the about to score, and they fumble on the 1 yard line. LSU drives length of the field. Obviously, they lose by 1 point. As soon as they start getting it rolling later in like October, it was like, man, we should have beat Florida State. Our record should be this. And it's like, well, no, you got dominated in that game for like 55 minutes. Then they go beat Bama. And again, that was their 6th win against Alabama at home since the Eisenhower administration. That's a real stat. And they did it by 1 point in the last play of the game. Hats off to them. Great win. But where I can't get away from is if you're LSU, and we all talk about how like their entire resume going into this year and the excitement built around what they did, you could say it's because they won the SEC West. You could say it's because they put up 30 in garbage time against Georgia. But really what it is, all of it's built off the fact is they beat Bama the year before. So now going into this year, taking another step forward, obviously, in year two, you're going to beat Bama, right? If I just told you, just described this like a year prior, and I told you, hey, there's a team that finished with like 4 losses, but they beat Bama at home on the last play of the game. Like, and they had a great recruiting class. They've got a coach that's been to a national championship before. What could go wrong? Now, I'm not saying they're going to go 5-7, but if that's not Texas A&M in purple and gold, I don't know what is.
Look, this is probably a very boring podcast for our listeners because I'm agreeing with you on everything. But we're simpatico in these thoughts. You just mentioned Texas A&M. Any chance they do something special this year? And then quickly, you touched really briefly on Kentucky earlier. Mm-hmm. Could Kentucky, in an alternate universe, finish second in the SEC East? Devin Leary, transfer quarterback from NC State. We just talked about Tennessee maybe hitting a couple of road bumps. Talk to me about A&M and Kentucky.
Okay, real quick, and I know I've done this on every single topic you've given me. This has been way too long-winded, like I always am, and I apologize. But Bama is, I'm firmly with you. They could go 9-3, but the whole idea that the dynasty is dead and this whole demise, I think it's greatly over-exaggerated. Defense is going to be great this year. Offensive line and running back is going to be as deep as they've had in 5 or 6 years. I think they're going to be really good there. And they get everyone at home. I think they lose to Texas, and I still think they go 11-1.
You do think they lose to Texas?
I think they lose by 10-plus points to Texas.
Do you really?
Here's why. Nobody's better than Clark, and he's got dudes there. They return all 5 offensive linemen. He's got 5 stars every receiver.
We're going to have to cut this one up. Hammy, we're cutting this one up and putting it on social media.
Okay, that's fine. But you want me to tell you why? Or like I can hurry it up. So you have Quinn Ewers at quarterback in his second year, who's the highest-rated quarterback in the history of recruiting services, right? Then you have all five starting offensive linemen that are coming back. You have Xavier Worthy at receiver, who's been the best receiver in the Big 12, one of the top in the country over the last however many years. Da'Tavion Sanders, who, if you don't know him, if you just go scroll down by one number from the second best tight end prospect in this year's NFL draft, that's who it is. We talk about Brock Bowers ad nauseum because he's so great. This is the next guy. He's going to be a top 20 pick and go in the NFL draft this year. You've got other 5 stars. You get A.D. Mitchell at another receiver spot. So on script, if you're on script, which Sark is great on script and he's great when he has dudes, I just don't see how.
You don't think that moment's too big for the Texas Longhorns? Because it's going to be an electric factory in Tuscaloosa.
What happened in the first drive of the game last year?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's at home. I get it. You're walking into the Lions then, dude. I'm just telling you, game day will be there, right? I would assume.
Probably.
It's going to be live.
So I just think they're going to leave the first quarter. 10-plus
points.
It sets up in a way that where, in my opinion, you're going to leave the first quarter down 14-3. Like, I think you're going to be down 2 scores at some point, and we don't know enough about Bama's quarterback situation.
Yeah.
This is my prediction. Okay, A&M, tell me about your Petrino quarterback that's not been good.
I don't know why Jimbo waffled on the is Petrino calling plays question at SEC meetings. Be like, yes, that's why we hired him. He's really good at that.
Everybody that's like close to the situation says that he is calling the plays. I don't trust Jimbo's ego enough to say that he's going to have like total hands-off approach to it. But Connor Wegman's a former 5-star. You've got arguably like the best 1-2 punch at receiver. It's probably top 3 or 5 in the conference. Stewart is an animal at receiver going into his sophomore year. You get Anaya Smith back. The defense was really good. I mean, they've got NFL dudes all across the DN or the D line.
And they stay healthy. They got banged up bad last year.
And all those guys are young. So I think they'll be really good. I think they're a 9-10 win team. And I think the same about Kentucky, man.
Kentucky can get 9-10?
I know you don't like Kentucky. I forgot about that.
You're right about that. I don't like Kentucky.
But like, I remember us doing the first interview we did. Was a preview of that game, and I've never seen someone get so fired up to talk shit about Kentucky besides you.
About football. It's me. That is me. Yes.
So like looking at Kentucky, you lose Will Levis, who was a projected first round pick, goes in the second round. Like, it's hard to improve at that position.
Like, yet they did.
Like tenfold. Like,
yes.
That guy was a liability at best at times, especially when you don't need a turnover. Devin Leary's a guy that has 35 touchdowns, 7 interceptions in his freshman year. Like, now you get Liam Cohen back, who was when they had the great offense 2 years ago and they won 10 games. He's now back. The offensive line should be better because they didn't lose 3 guys in the NFL like they did last year.
Yeah.
They were their top 5 pass catchers. Like, they're going to be good.
And Phil Steele writes, this is a rare occasion where a team loses a second-round draft pick at quarterback and actually improves. That's what he's talking about. Yeah, it's right here. I'm reading it. Yeah. So there you go.
But, yeah, I think it's true. And I think that, like, they're going to return to a little bit more of like what Kentucky does best, which is play tough defense and be more physical up front.
Yeah,
and
run the ball. Great offensive line play. Yeah, exactly.
I just think that they have enough. Like Cohen, we just lose sight of how difficult it is to win games. Like, and I'll circle it back to the team that you played for and have like obviously a huge audience with is like, think about how good Georgia was last year. Maybe one of the best teams of all time. You're a Malachi Starks tackle at Mizzou away from a blemish on the regular season. You're a fourth quarter comeback away from not beating Ohio State and getting to the national championship. And they were able to do all that, but it's very hard to win national championships.
Yeah, and they will have those games again this year. Yeah. It's unrealistic to expect 50 point blowout wins week in and week out. Exactly. I was talking with our intern Hammy about this on our Monday podcast. He mentioned, hey, the one thing that people probably don't really appreciate about Stetson yet, because you haven't missed it, was his resilience in game. Take the Alabama national championship game, for example, the crazy fumble play. Everybody's like down and out, ho-hum, next drive, A.D. Mitchell bomb touchdown. Like Stetson was able to have that short-term memory loss. How will Carson do in those moments? Because it's going to happen. And shit, it might happen week three against South Carolina. If they go three and out punt, fumble, and it's not Carson's fault, people are going to get really, really anxious very quickly. How does he respond? So you make up, you bring up a great point.
I will say too that we don't talk about this enough, but it's still one of the greatest in-game coaching decisions I've ever seen in college football, like watching it for 37 years, is you are down to Alabama in the fourth and you're in that all too familiar position of like, what the hell else?
Here we go. Yeah. Here we go again.
I love Graham Coffey to death, dog out West, great dude on Twitter. I remember him tweeting during the commercial break, might be time to bring in JT Daniels. But like, you had every opportunity to run the football, to take the ball out of Stetson's hand, bring in somebody. You go four straight plays all through the air, four plays. I think he had one pass interference, which is probably deserved. And you go four plays for 72 yards, all passes, all completed, touchdown to win the national championship. It was one of the most impressive things I've ever seen from somebody that was doubted nonstop.
I mean, that's like, that just goes back to the Hollywood story. Like, this should be made into a movie type stuff. Yeah. As painful as that is and nauseating for non-Georgia fans.
Yeah, I don't want to see it.
Like that, like, hopefully they cover it the right way. Let's just make sure Netflix doesn't make it.
Like Untold, and they give them a college degree while they're at it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Okay. Chatting with Chris Marler from Saturday Down South. Love talking to you. We're going to keep this going. I got one more topic that I want to cover with you. Follow Chris on social media at Vern Funquist. This episode of Punt and Pass is presented to you by the new look Prize Picks. Download the Prize Picks app. All new look. It's sick. They're getting ready for football season, college football season underway this weekend. The week zero college football board is live. And if you download the app and use the promo code PUNT, you get a 100% deposit match up to your first $100. Caleb Williams, reigning Heisman Trophy winner, his total rush yards this weekend against San Jose State, 28 and a half rushing yards. Now, keep in mind, college quarterbacks, sacks count against their rushing yards, okay? This is going over. Caleb Williams is going to put on a show Saturday night, take the over, 28 and a half rushing yards. Caleb Williams, Sam Hartman, I mentioned to you 260 and a half passing yards. I would have to assume, I know Tommy Reese is no longer the offensive coordinator there, but with Sam Hartman transferring from Wake Forest to now be at the helm of Notre Dame, Chris, they better air it out. Like, you take advantage of this guy's skill set. I would think that Notre Dame's talent at the wideout position should be able to expose Navy secondary. Yeah, I'll go over Sam Hartman. 260 and a half passing yards. And then here's the best one. Ready? Stick with me here. This is my Prize Picks three-piece. I'm cooking up a three-piece for this weekend.
Love it.
I'll post it on my social media, at Drew Butler and at Punt and Pass. Hank Bachmeier. We all remember him. Four-year starter at Boise State. He has transferred to Louisiana Tech. Louisiana Tech air raid offense. I've never seen this before. His prop for rushing yards is negative one half yard. Okay. Negative a half rushing yards. Now, I had to do some research. Okay. Yeah. He played in four games last year before he got injured. Week one, he had negative 6 rushing yards. Week two, he had negative 10 rushing yards. Again, these are sacks. Week three, he had negative 18 rushing yards. This is at Boise State. Then in week four, he starts trending in the right direction. He has 8 rush yards. So this weekend, to bring home the three-piece on prize picks, we're going over Hank Bachmeier, negative a half a rushing yard. Just stay at zero.
Yeah.
Get 1 yard. Okay.
And before anyone even says anything about my friend Drew here being a degenerate, it's not being a degenerate. It's called dedication. It's a different G word.
You're exactly correct. I know. Right. So we're going over Caleb Williams, 28 and a half rushing yards, over Sam Hartman, 260 and a half passing yards. And to bring it home at 9 p.m. on CBS Sports Network, Florida International is taking on Louisiana Tech. We're going to stay up late and hope that we don't just get a demoralizing late sack. That doesn't mean anything. Right. Hank Bachmeier over negative 1 half rushing yard. That's your DB three-piece on Prize Picks for this weekend. Download the Prize Picks app. Use the promo code PUNT. You get a 100% deposit match up to your first $100. How locked in are you going to be for week zero? We do have some SEC action. Hawaii's taking on Vanderbilt 7:30 p.m. in Nashville on SEC Network. And then top 10 ranked USC, the Trojans, reigning Heisman Trophy winner, Caleb Williams. Nobody will be able to watch it because it's on Pac-12 Network.
That is
They're playing San Jose State at 8 p.m.
That is...
And here is your primetime ESPN game.
Exactly. Read this.
UMass against New Mexico State, 7 p.m. from Las Cruces, New Mexico, on ESPN.
I wouldn't watch
how on earth
the Civil War.
How does that happen?
I had zero clue. Like, that is like, unless we are like that, that sounds like some sort of weird political thing from like 1842, like where we're just trying to fight for territory or something. Because that sounds awful. Like that is, UMass is the worst team in the country.
So UMass, again, call me a degenerate or call me dedicated. I believe they're an 8-point underdog. Could there be value there? I don't know. They do travel to Auburn in week two. So watch out for the Minutemen.
No,
starting in New Mexico State, week zero action.
New Mexico State, who I'm pretty sure also the Aggies. They're like the third Aggie team or something.
They are.
Okay. They are they're awful. Like this is like a relegation game.
Dude. UMass, I'm looking at UMass's schedule from last year. We're going deep cuts now on
podcast. Yeah, I love this.
Looking at 2022 UMass. 1-11.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to Army 44-7 last week of the season. They got blanked by Temple 28-0.
Tough to do.
Texas A&M only beat them 20-3, so they showed a little life in a College Station.
That's UMass?
Yeah.
That's pathetic.
Yeah, and then Stony Brook. They beat Stony Brook 20-3 to get off the schneid in week three. So, look, you know.
Dude, they had the worst offense in the entire country.
But will you watch them? Will you watch them take on New Mexico State? You absolutely will, right?
Do you know how many points per game they scored a year ago?
No, without looking, I would have to say, I mean, I just saw some. 13 and a half points.
12 and a half.
Yeah.
So
that's bad. That's bad. Real Navy bad. At Notre Dame, live from Dublin, Ireland, 2:30 p.m. on NBC. UTEP, that's the MacGruber School, University of Texas, El Paso.
Yeah.
Thank you. Not UTSA, as I said earlier. Yeah. They're taking on Jacksonville State. So look, we have 8 games. I'm so mad USC's not on ESPN. Like, that's such a joke. It's such an encapsulation of why the Pac-12 is folding
right
before our eyes.
I will say this. If you're talking about from a betting standpoint, the best win I had the entire year last year was in week zero for the Vandy-Hawaii game. Because I bet
15. I was on Hawaii, so I lost.
Oh, I was on Vandy, but my big bet was over. It's two of the worst defenses in the country. Like, even this week, I'm taking Notre Dame 20 and a half to cover that. Vandy covering 18. Notre Dame.
So you're going to lay it with Vanderbilt. I saw him at 17 and a half. You like that?
I'm going to take that. I'm going to take Notre Dame full game and first half, and then I'm going to take the over in Vandy Hawaii as well, because Vandy and Hawaii had the 123rd and 125th ranked defenses last year in scoring defense. But I had over 13 and a half first quarter for Vandy and Hawaii last year. It was 7-0, and Hawaii had the ball.
Interception.
Fumble returned for a touchdown.
That's right. I remember watching that.
Zero time left in the first quarter.
That's right. I remember watching that.
I was losing it. I was losing it. So yeah, there's I'll watch it because listen, here's the deal. I would watch a Bishop Sycamore scrimmage right now.
Of course,
football.
Dude.
And if you're a real like a big football fan, if you're a Georgia fan that follows recruiting, or somebody it's like from another school that really gets hell bent on recruiting, there's also some really good high school football on ESPN all
day. Yeah, there is. And if you're in Atlanta on Peachtree TV, Channel 8 and Channel 17, so you're 100% right on that. Vanderbilt beat Hawaii in Honolulu last year, 63-10. People forget Vanderbilt won five games last year.
Mm-hmm.
They beat Florida, and they beat Kentucky. So.
Single file walk, storm the field. So one of the greatest things I've ever seen.
And, dude, what a sight to be seen on SEC Network, because that end zone is demolished, and they're playing a football game. So that will be funny to see. But it's week zero. I texted you when we were confirming our time tonight. I am so ready for football to start. Please make it happen. And what a great way to ring in the season with my man Chris Marler from Saturday Down South. Be sure to check out, subscribe, follow the podcast, Saturday Football Uncensored with Chris and Tyler. Two shows a week? One show a week?
What two shows a week. So usually we go live on Sunday and recap games, and then Wednesday we do like a preview show. I tell you what's fun too. If you listen, and I always say if you hate the bleep button and you love football, you will love what we do on
You guys are great.
Yeah,
you guys
are great. I appreciate it. But it is uncensored. If anybody that watched the video last year where I was talking about the Georgia Tennessee pregame that I admittedly nailed, there were 17 F-bombs in 2.5 minutes. So it's like
good. You drove your point home.
I did. But yeah, we do a live show, and we have a call-in line for drunk fans on Saturday to call in, and we play all those.
Is that new, or was that last year too?
We did it last 2 years, but like last year we kind of like tailed off a little bit with it, but this year we're gonna bring it back. It should be fun.
I'm gonna call in. I'm definitely gonna do that. But yeah, you guys are uncensored. Look, people, if you're listening, if you want a friend, buy a dog. All right. If you want to be entertained and get knowledge about college football, listen to Punt Pass and listen to Saturday Football Uncensored. Yeah. And follow Chris on social media at Vern Funquist, and follow us at Punt and Pass, at Drew Butler, at From Jake, puntandpass.com. And follow Prize Picks as well at Prize Picks, the best daily fantasy game in the entire industry. If you download the Prize Picks app, you use the promo code PUNT, you get a 100% deposit match up to your first $100. It just gave you the DB3 piece that's going to cash this weekend. We're going to get off to a very hot start. Caleb Williams, rush yards. Hank Bachmeyer, rush yards. Shout out Hank. And Sam Hartman, pass yards over all three. That's it. PrizePicks.com, at PrizePicks. Download the app. Use the promo code PUNT. Chris, thank you so much, my man. I really appreciate it.
Of course, dude. I will talk to you soon.
Absolutely. And everybody else, we will talk to you next week. See you.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.